Today on Gateway Unlocked.
It is simply providing consumers with their preferred payment method. And there are some merchants that just, for whatever reason, just don't have that. They apply a one size fits all to all of the markets they operate in. And they're obviously doing business there, but they're not doing all the business they could. And I think that's a hugely missed opportunity. And I think consulting with the likes of NBGS and PPRO would allow them to unlock new potential.
Hi, and welcome to Gateway Unlocked, MasterCard Payment Gateway's podcast, where we connect with teammates from across the globe and organization on payment trends, innovation, and ideas that are shaping our business. I'm Anne Herrera, and today we're discussing increasing importance of consumer payment preferences across the globe as businesses continue to expand beyond their physical borders. Luckily, I am joined by two amazing individuals in our industry who are also thought leaders on this topic. From MasterCard Payment Gateway Services, we have Director Sadiq Barachia and Adrian Burgess from our partner PPRO, a digital payments infrastructure provider. Okay, guys, I'm always excited for podcasts. We really get to connect with teammates. Sadiq, you're in London. I don't get to see you that often. But this one especially is incredibly exciting because we get a partner on board as well. And we don't typically get partners on our podcast that often. So I'm very excited to have this discussion. Let's first start off, though. Adrian, tell us about PPRO and really at the heart of what a digital payments infrastructure provider means.
Yeah, sure. And thank you for having me, by the way. Really happy to be here. So at its core, PPRO provide access to all of the key elements of the payments ecosystem needed to process payments globally. This ranges from what is our core business that focuses on digital payment methods or digital local payment methods through to infrastructure solutions in key areas such as risk and funds flow management as well. And my role here at PPRO is, as head of strategic growth, is to consult with our payment service providers across the globe on their digital payment strategies. And that means that we help our partners understand both their existing and any new payments markets they may want to enter, ensuring they have all of the necessary payment methods and perhaps infrastructure they need to support their merchants. That consequently means that merchants can maximize their addressable market and grow, which is what we all want. And then consumers get the best possible payments experience at their favorite retailers by getting to use their preferred payment method. That's how I'd sum it up in a nutshell.
Well, and very important given just the proliferation of cross-border payments and businesses going internationally, especially, you know, after the pandemic. Sadiq, I really want to tie this together. So for our new customers or perhaps customers who are just onboarding, how do we work with PPRO? How does MasterCard Payment Gateway Services connect with PPRO for our partners?
So it's a good question. With PPRO, we have a simple unified API that allows us to connect into the local payment methods that PPRO support today. The number of PPRO APMs varies over 100 APMs that we can connect into. We don't enable everything on the gateway. We're looking at, you know, where our customers are, our customer demands are, their merchant needs, consumer needs, and we reflect that in the service offerings on the gateway today. So we have a simple integration option through PPRO to enable APMs. We also try and make it very simple and straightforward for merchants and our customers to be able to enable and utilize the various payment methods that we have available on the gateway today.
Yeah. And I mean, we do have a global business, so that makes sense, you know, making sure that where our businesses want to go, where our partners want to go, we're there to support them.
Yeah.
So we've already mentioned so many different things that I want to talk about. So let's dive into our topic because, like, in truth, we really have the entire globe to talk about in only 20 minutes. So let's not delay. So it's not breaking news that online sales, including doing business internationally, are on the rise. And we can point to a million different reasons why. A really good stat that I had found preparing for this podcast was from a recent MasterCard press release in June. And I'm just gonna quote it so I don't get it wrong. The businesses see that online business and international sales are key drivers in their business, with 7 in 10 recording above global average growth in online sales, while 77% are planning to do more business internationally going forward. So, okay, long and short, everyone is online. So to both of you, how do businesses connect with consumers globally when it comes to payments? What should they consider?
So a few things. One is the localization elements, right? So merchants who want to take their business global need to think about the local consumer requirements. Consumers have preferred ways to pay. If a merchant wants to enter a new market in Europe or looking at cross-border, looking at opening up new avenues of consumers, they will need definitely to understand the local payment mix. Thinking about the local market knowledge and achieving that balance that merchants need to be able to provide to able to enhance the checkout experience, meet the needs of consumers. For a new merchant, for a new customer, for shopping with a new merchant, they may not want to provide the card data upfront. They may want to look at alternative options, options that they're familiar with, such as local payment methods that they're familiar with. And it's really down to the merchant to understand the local dynamics, the market nuances, and the consumer preferences in understanding their strategy in entering those marketplaces, but also how they're going to continue to meet the growing demands of their customer base.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything Sadiq has said. Knowledge is very much power, or is growth and is opportunity in the payment space. And I think you have to understand not only your consumer, but you have to understand the market you're in and the markets outside of the market you're in that your consumers are in as well. It's very important to understand the infrastructure of a country and what drives consumer preference when selecting which payment method mix you should have at your point of sale. And that does apply in store, but as we're talking about online, that is where we'll focus today. And each region around the world has different infrastructures fundamentally that mean that preferences are completely different. If you look at the European region, we are typically a card-centric region and a bank transfer-centric region. That is because of the infrastructure that has been set up historically in the region. We're very focused on our banking infrastructure. We have a high population in most markets where most individuals do have a bank account. That naturally then lends itself to the technologies available through the card and bank processing systems. You look in Asia Pacific, it's a much more varied market there. The banking infrastructure is varied from market to market. At a regional level, you're looking at around 60% of the population having either some kind of bank account and equally an internet connection, but mobile devices are huge in the APAC region. And that means that actually the preference there is driven towards mobile-based technologies such as e-wallets. That's something we're going to see increase as well, because, as I said, the 60% into internet penetration is actually relatively low when you compare region to region. Actually, during the pandemic, we saw in Southeast Asia several million new consumers coming online for the first time, which naturally just drove additional e-commerce sales. LATAM is a different landscape altogether as well. They actually focus very much on cash-based online payment methods in addition to cards. And these cash methods are based on the infrastructure available in that region as well. So these cash-based methods, what happens is a consumer goes online, you select the item you want to purchase, you print off a voucher that you then take to the nearest brick and mortar store, you pay in cash, that merchant then lets the online retailer know that the payment has been made and the goods are shipped. That may sound unusual to us in a different region, but that is the local norm in the LATAM region, in certain markets in the LATAM region, because of the infrastructure that they have available to them. So there's a huge variety when you start to look globally. And that's why Sadiq's point of making sure that merchants and PSPs understand the consumers and markets is so important.
That's a good point. The cash-based voucher system is not just isolated to LAC. What you'll find in markets like Japan, for example, Konbini is another very popular payment method that you think in a market as sophisticated as Japan, consumers would be thinking about digital in-app payments or online payments, but they actually, Konbini is another one of these APMs that has retained its market share, and it's very popular. Customers would like to print off these vouchers, go into a local store that accepts Konbini and check out, make the payment to the merchant over the counter in cash. It could be card, but generally speaking, it's a cash-based voucher. They can go out, public, print it out, go into a store and pay locally.
We've been seeing an emphasis in touch-free so much, and that seems like touch. Like, what would the growth process, or what would be necessary, or how do we perhaps shift that so it is less touch, physically going into a store? You know, this asked me to do that 2 years ago, and I probably say no. You know, what is involved in changing the consumer preference? And this doesn't have to be just with the cash vouchers, but, you know, how do we see these consumer preferences changing? Is there a move to touch-free? Have we noticed that those cash vouchers are going down?
I think when you talk about how consumer preferences change, I think it's not about necessarily changing consumer preferences. That would perhaps relate to trying to get consumers to use a different type of payment method they're not used to or they don't prefer. I think, which is one element which we can touch on, but I think actually it's about enabling consumers to access their preferred payment method. Now, that might mean that we need to enable a card terminal in a store to have contactless or touch-free payment technology so that a mobile device can be used, because they may not have a payment bank card to do it. So they need a device in order to make that payment in store. And that is still very much sort of applies online as well. When looking at sort of the user experience of the payment process for any consumer, the buzzword that is still used and is still key is making it as frictionless as possible. And that can, the frictionless element can apply to lots of different things. It can apply to having the right mix of payment methods available so that a consumer can choose the way they want to pay in the preferred way. It can be offering those via multiple channels, in-store or e-commerce. When borders are closed, travel is down, you need to remove that physical friction border of having to travel overseas to make purchase from your preferred retailers, and other elements as well, where we'll see enhancements. So actually contactless QR codes have come up a lot in the pandemic as well, making things more accessible using digital technologies. And because of the pandemic, actually for health reasons, right? So there's lots of reasons why we will see innovation and shift towards more frictionless payments across all of the different methodologies.
I think that's a fair point. We've seen a shift already in the last few years to how some of these more established, maybe voucher-based payments are moving to a different format, moving into in-app QR codes. They're trying to make it more frictionless. They want consumers to try different things. New users to the online space want to try something different. They may not have been using certain types of payment methods or channels to be able to make payments. However, what we're seeing is that even the local payment method providers are starting to change their approach. They want to make it more frictionless. They want to bring it more in-app. They want to be able to have that contactless, touch-free user journey, which they're starting to proliferate across various channels. And this is also starting to expand across not just within Europe or Asia Pacific. We're seeing that in many different payment types right now. LAC is a prime example. LAC, the proliferation of APMs, is growing. The number of players entering that marketplace is growing, and the various channels open to consumers to pay is starting to reflect the way the industry is moving, and also how consumers are being more demanding of merchants, but also to increase conversion at checkout.
I mean, consumer demand, that's essentially a bit of the name of the game. Am I right? Is ensuring that we're meeting consumer demand, or our merchants, our partners' merchants are meeting consumer demand. So let's talk a little bit about that. I suspect, based off of how, well, one, brilliant you guys are and what we've been talking about, you guys are probably in the room a lot to really talk about, you know, are you meeting your partners' and your merchants' consumer demands? Are you meeting their preference to payments? How do you counsel the partners and those merchants on, hey, here are some things to look out for. Here is, you know, maybe you could be doing this better. Maybe your conversion rate isn't high enough. What do our merchants need to look for in regards to ensuring they've got the really good strategic and holistic payment method mix?
It comes down to the knowledge factor as well, right? Merchants really need to understand new markets that they want to move into. They need to understand that dynamic payment mix. You know, you've got the established card, the wallet payments, fantastic. But you also need to make sure that you understand consumer preference. If you want to enter specific marketplaces, having that local deep insight to be able to understand how can I improve conversion? How can I improve on my customer acquisition returns? be able to reflect that in the consumer journey. The more options you provide at checkout with regards to payments reflects your understanding of the marketplace. There's research out there which talks about, you know, consumers will abandon checkout if they don't see their preferred payment type. And that's something that needs to be guarded against, especially if you think about the acquisition costs that merchants incur, be able to reflect that and obviously maximize on the conversion at checkout.
Yeah, and I think on top of that, partnerships like the one with Bpro and MPGS mean that we actually can go jointly to clients and consult with them with our collective expertise and solutions. And I think that is a one-stop shop value for our partners, their merchants, and onwardly consumers. It is sharing that knowledge down the chain so that ultimately consumers get the benefits. If we think of ourselves as consumers for a moment, payments work best when we don't think about them when we're actually making them, right? It's as sort of harmonious and frictionless and easy as possible. It's familiar, it's safe. That means that everyone else in the sort of value chain of the payments ecosystem has done their job really well. And I think that's the friction point to look out for. And it does touch on things like conversion rate, ensuring that the payments you have set up are processing optimally. We collectively have the ability to do that analysis, help our clients understand why payments are performing in the way they are and help them improve that if it's needed. I think also then it is giving access to the infrastructure and the actual technologies to be able to then maximize the addressable market that a merchant can go after as well. And I think then the third pillar of that is then just general market awareness and in terms of knowledge, right? We talked a lot about stats and regional trends today. That's not something that all merchants can just get off the shelf because they are, quite rightly so, focused on their consumers and running their business. And that varies between the SMEs that we might consult with and also the large corporates as well. There's going to be a real mix of knowledge. So I think it's the onus is on us to make sure that our partners are empowered to take that knowledge forward and ultimately benefit their consumers.
So what do you tell a, let's say, banking partner A, who's in there with its large corporation merchant, and this merchant is going, you know, I need to move into a different region. Cross-border commerce is on the rise. I need to move into, you know, X markets. How do you advise them on what to do first? Because to me, and granted, I'm not a CEO of a large corporation, it would feel daunting. It would feel, and the payment system ecosystem right now is daunting. It's very fragmented. It's just, there's so much. How do you advise them on what to do first?
So from our perspective, we always start what I like to call the 40,000 foot view. We look at the market you're either in that you want to expand in, or we look at the market you want to go into. And then also the markets that might be inwardly trading towards the market you're already in as well. So that inbound and outbound cross-border element. We look at those markets on a whole and sort of share a profile of that in an almost did you know factor. Let's make sure we will have a foundational and level understanding of what this market is and why it is the way it is. We then obviously layer that over with the specific vertical that merchant or banking partner might be servicing, because there are nuances within that as well. If you look at the profile of a travel transaction versus a digital download versus a retail transaction, all of them operate in different ways for different reasons. We then apply that. We go down to the 20,000 foot view. We then look at the merchants. We then look at the existing capabilities that are available, and we can then look at where potentially the gaps are that we've identified in those sort of 40,000 and 20,000 foot views. And that's really the starting point for that conversation. And that opens up a much wider conversation and consultancy about payments in general, rather than just going solving banking partner A's, I need a gateway or I need this payment method. You actually come to them with a sort of full stack solution to help them grow beyond what they even thought was possible.
I agree more. Actually, I think providing that insight, that strategic lens to customers is vitally important. It can be daunting, as you mentioned, to be able to understand that mix, making sure you've got the right balance, enhancing the domestic cross-border flows, looking at where the merchants, where the customers are coming from, enhancing your payment mix, understanding what are the core requirements of that marketplace to meet the customer demand. You can always enhance, adapt, reflect on what you need as a payment option. Adding too much friction at the checkout is always challenging. Asking for too much information is always going to be challenging. Getting the right balance, having the right mix, And also making that payment feel invisible, where it should come second nature to the consumer. If they have to think about it, then obviously you're adding too much into that mix.
I love that. It's a simplification, which, you know, and we were talking to Maria Parpao a little bit about this in an earlier podcast, is we're seeing so much diversity in payments, which is great. But at the same time, we have to simplify it for our partners, for our merchants. And like you said, make it seamless. And I love that. I want to shift gears just a little bit. I want to talk about some of the different fun, you know, digital, local, alternative payment methods that are there. What are some new payment method innovations there to watch? Like what do you see that's, and I think there's a lot of exciting things in the payment ecosystem, but what are some exciting things that you guys see, particularly in your roles?
I think the proliferation, you know, of the payment options now available to consumers is growing at checkout. Buy now, pay later seems to be one of these more emerging. It's established. It's growing. We're seeing more and more entrants into that space. We've seen some of the digital giants, wallet providers moving into that space. That was always going to be the case because of the market share that the existing buy now, pay later operators are starting to carve out for themselves. I think there's proliferation around, you know, different kind of use cases around whether you want to have, you know, the account to account, open banking. There's so many different variations now starting to emerge that it makes that optionality that you want to think about a little bit more challenging, making sure you have that right balance, but also understanding that market dynamic, the consumer aspects, you know, and then obviously working towards making sure that you're building the right payment option mix for the markets you're in, having that that view of the lens of what's emerging, what you want to watch, crypto, all of these things are starting to emerge in various segments and markets.
Yeah, I think two things from my side. One is the emergence of QR codes, or I should say re-emergence of QR codes, I think. When QR codes first started being sort of talked about in the payments world, I took a slightly cynical view to it and thought, I think these might be the mini disc of payments. If you remember the bridge between CDs and downloadable MP3, I thought that might be it. The pandemic has proven me very wrong because they've proved actually such an essential, very economical way to make a payment digital. And it's also now continuing. It's not a fad. It's not a part-time thing. It is enabling what were previously just online payment methods or in-store methods to sort of cross-pollinate a bit. We were always pre-pandemic talking about having the sort of multi-user journey, being able to move from seamlessly from online to in-store. QR codes are a really effective way of doing that. With so many mobile devices in people's pockets, you can generate a QR code at the point of sale and actually now turn what might have been a cash transaction into an e-wallet transaction because of a QR code. It's not actually too much of a complex technology lift for even small merchants to be able to provide that kind of technology and improve that consumer experience. I think the second trend that I think we're going to see develop more is the evolution of super apps. And this is something that certainly I've experienced has been born out of the Asia Pacific regions with payment methods like WeChat Pay and Alipay, where actually it's not just an app where you can monitor the payments, but it is a social app. It is a way of paying utility bills. It is a way of interacting with people. There's lots more. It is a marketing platform. There are lots more functions and facilities that are being built out within apps as people shift towards that mobile smartphone and mobile device preferences that I think we'll see a lot of. Some buy now pay later providers have started to get into that space. You can have a specific app that actually tracks all of your different payments from all of the different areas that you may have used, that Klarna being a prime example. You may have shopped on three websites, each individually, completely unlinked off of Klarna. The Klarna app centralizes all of your payments, but it also promotes lots of different stores through the app as well. And so I think we might start to see some apps starting to proliferate their services and expand to keep that consumer experience as constant and as seamless as possible.
I remember, and in my marketing days, you know, we've used QR codes for multiple reasons. And I remember very vividly when somebody saying, and not within MasterCard, goes, QR codes, are those ever going to take off? And when I saw them again during the pandemic, I felt the same thing. I'm like, oh, this isn't going to work. But wow, like talk about a Cinderella story in a way.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. definitely. It's a very, very surprising, certainly for me, surprising evolution of what was, I thought, an outdated technology is now actually blazing the trail for removing that friction that we were talking about earlier.
We're using them every day. I use them once or twice a day. You know, so they've become ingrained in now almost part of our, you know, the next time I get offered a payment option to be able to use for QR, I have no hesitance, you know, in adopting the QR code payment. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that in Europe. We're seeing how some of the more established payment methods, in especially Northern Europe, are now moving to a QR code based delivery because they know that's here to stay. Consumers prefer it and it's frictionless at checkout because it connects straight into the consumer's mobile app.
This conversation is bringing me often to another piece of content that we're really looking at and we're building out, actually. And I want to get, since I have your brains here, I'd love to get your guys' thoughts and ideas, is contactless. Yes, I understand, you know, we've got payment preferences in different regions. We look at, you know, cash on delivery in LATAM, et cetera. But do we think that contactless is here to stay? Is it going to continue? Are we going to see a shift backwards in regards to payment preferences and payment methods?
I think contactless is part and parcel of what we do every day. It's ingrained in us. I've talked about invisible. We talked about invisible, seamless, frictionless. There's nothing less frictionless than contactless at the moment, I don't feel. Mm-hmm. It is something that we've all grown up with, where we use it every single day, in every format of our payment, in our daily lives. I think contactless is going to be something that continues to grow. And we're going to look at ways that, you know, through QR codes and other forms of payment online, how that's going to manifest itself in that frictionless, touch-free environment, because it's something that we as consumers use every day, and we should expect our merchants and their shoppers to also to expect the same.
I agree. I think it's also here to stay. I think we're going to see it evolve considerably over the next few years. It has to evolve in the right way. There's understandably consumer risk and concern about increasing the limit to what it is now here in the UK. It's £100 for Apple Pay. It is actually uncapped when you use it via your mobile device. There are a couple of different nuances, but the contactless technology is all about removing that friction. You're seeing it in watches, you're seeing it in mobile devices, you're seeing it even in rings, you're seeing it actually installed at the point of sale in some pubs who now have the contactless technology on the back of the beer tap. You see all of these different types of innovations, small pockets of them that, again, I think will just become more and more widespread wherever that infrastructure is being built up to support that kind of technology. So yeah, I do think it is here to stay.
I really want to go to that pub that has the contactless with the beer. That's like the best of two worlds for me.
I mean, removing friction at a bar, I think, is a good thing for a lot of people. You see it at music festivals as well, that kind of innovation there, where there's a huge concentration of people making purchases at small and medium enterprises, individual pop-up stands. Making that as frictionless as possible is actually really beneficial for those SMEs as well. And it's becoming more and more affordable for those size businesses to offer that technology too.
I want to bring it back also to our partnership. And so part of the MasterCard way is having the customer at the heart of what we do. And one of the benefits to a partnership with Gateway is that we connect our banking partners and merchants to great partners like PeakPro and Adrian, really to help build that holistic payment experience. So like specifically with PeakPro and with MasterCard Payment Gateway Services, what are the benefits to the partnership and what are the collaboration? How do you guys move forward, you know, with our merchants and with our partners to really help them build? If you could go into details on that, that would be awesome.
So I think from PeakPro, you know, we've got a great number of local payment methods that we can enable on the gateway on behalf of our customers. Our customers are only as successful as their merchants.
Yeah, and I think in partnership, we have the insights, the expertise, the solutions to really help our mutual partners understand their merchants in more detail, help their merchants understand their consumers in more detail, and make recommendations that are based on solid data, that are based on market expertise, and will ultimately help them grow. We do a lot of the heavy lifting on their part. As we talked about earlier, the fragmentation is a difficult thing to understand at times. We can help remove a lot of the complexity and deliver meaningful insights and meaningful solutions that will help these our partners and their merchants grow.
I feel like we've barely scratched the surface of everything that we could talk about, and definitely the depth of your guys' knowledge, especially, you know, looking at, I mean, we talked a little bit about consumers' preference to pay, you know, a little bit about conversion rates and channel optimization, and this is all incredibly helpful. This is slightly the most fun part for me. So last three questions, and they're a little bit of heavy, not heavy hitters, but kind of fast hitters. One sentence or less, what is one mistake that you see merchants make on their website that you would want them to fix?
I think improving the time at checkout by having that frictionless payment experience, reducing the number of potential issues that could arise. So whether it's data capture, making sure you're asking the right questions, the right bits of information, but also when it comes to that, if you can work with a payment provider that can give you, you know, consumers' billing, shipping address, that makes it really simple, really unique, and frictionless at checkout, streamline the time at checkout, it really does help.
For me, it is simply providing consumers with their preferred payment method. And there are some merchants that just, for whatever reason, just don't have that. They apply a one-size-fits-all to all of the markets they operate in. And they're obviously doing business there, but they're not doing all the business they could. And I think that's a hugely missed opportunity. And I think consulting with the likes of MBGS and PPRO would allow them to unlock new potential.
Yes, and you make a good point. And well, and it shouldn't be hard work if everything is seamless and frictionless. Adrian, and you also raised a good point, and it brought me back to one of our earlier conversations on, you know, if you have a one-size-fits-all approach, you know, yes, you're not getting as many conversions as checkouts and higher card abandonment, but you had, or maybe I had read it on in your either PPRO now, you know, new content hub, which is amazing, or within your insights, but it talked about there's very little cannibalization if you offer more payments. And I can't quote it, but can you remind me what it was? Because it was a very insightful.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a general trend. It's not necessarily that we'd fix it to a certain percentage or fact or figure. The simple fact is, if you are offering only cards, for example, in a given market, and cards are only used for 20% of transactions online, you're missing out on 80%. So you're capturing that 20%. If you add the other preferences, other payment method type, which may be more preferential, you're just going to unlock that additional percentage of addressable market. It's very unlikely you will see a huge cannibalization of your existing methods. You might see a little drop off because those consumers who actually do want to pay with the other type of method will then switch to their preference. But that's it. You will not lose business by offering the payment methods that your consumer base actually want to use. You will, as we've seen in our data, typically only ever see an increase in your bottom line.
Second question, that's last of the three questions. And we've kind of touched on this, but I'd love to get a little bit more of your thoughts. All right, up and coming or most underrated digital payment method. What is it and why?
I think coming into the Europe region, I think we will see a massive increase in WeChat Pay and Alipay. Those are the super apps that I saw earlier, the two huge e-wallets based out of China. I think we'll see a lot more of that usage in the EU region.
We actually had a really good article on super apps as well in the MEA region, but I found that very insightful. And I'd love to discuss super apps more, perhaps in the next podcast.
I think the super apps is an interesting space to continue to watch. There's a couple of things that I think are emerging still, and we're going to be watch this space and see how merchant adoption takes off. You know, the proliferation of crypto is starting to become, you know, something where we can start to see, you know, merchant adoption starting to pick up. It might be still relatively small. When consumers start to adopt and want to pay with crypto, these are the kind of considerations that we need to offer to merchants.
Yeah, no, very exciting. All right, well, and you kind of already alluded at it, but the last question is, what's next?
I think for MPGS, continue to drive the agenda of local payment methods, continue to drive the insight and knowledge within our customer base. to ensure that they understand why local payment methods and alternative payment methods are fundamental to their business and to their merchant needs, and understanding those through insights, consulting, consultation with MPGS and PPRO continue to drive the agenda for their merchants and their consumers. Without that, and without that continuity, you know, we want to make sure that we're supporting our customers throughout that process.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's continuing to fight the good fight of ensuring that consumers have access to the way they want to pay. I think we're going to see that increase as regions and individual markets improve their infrastructure, give more people access to the digital payments ecosystem. That will increase financial inclusion as well for those that are previously unbanked, now have access to a bank account. That unlocks a whole host of new commerce opportunities for consumers and merchants alike. So I think, yeah, in partnerships like the one we have with MPGS, it will be continuing to drive that forward to make sure that everybody has access to that, the financial ecosystem.
Well, I get those are very exciting. What's next? I'm excited to hopefully be on this journey with you guys and talk to you guys a little bit more as we really evolve the what's next into what's happening now. Absolutely. Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for joining us. And we will catch you guys next time with our next payment podcast.